Hello, everyone, and welcome to Film Festival Reviews. This is Christina Kotlar.
And I'm here today with a longtime friend and someone that I respect so much for all the work that she's been doing since the beginning when we started hanging out together. We always had a similar outlook and desire to do what we're doing, to keep doing what we're doing.
Kimberly Skirm is a casting director, producer, writer, director, in short, a storyteller. Her work includes independent and Hollywood feature films, television series, government agency videos, and commercials. She recently completed directing Ward 8, a proof of concept piece for a series in development, and is the regional casting director for Starz, original series, The Girlfriend Experience. Her professional memberships include the Casting Society of America, New York Women in Film and Television, New York, Women in Film and Video, D.C., as well as the immediate past chair of Women in Film and Television International. Additionally, she is a founding member of the Television, Internet, and Video Association, the Peer Awards, and is on the Women's Film Preservation Fund Committee. Her 27-year dedication to the art of non-traditional casting has earned her a stellar reputation in the industry. Philanthropic work includes the Chesapeake Film Festival, Advisory Board Chair of Arts Education in Maryland Schools Alliance, the New York Junior League, Junior League of Washington, D.C., as well as advisory board member at the National Conservatory of Dramatic Arts in Washington, D.C. Honestly, I don't know where she finds the time, but she does, and she does it very well. What brought us together that included our many trips to Sundance Film Festival, hosting panels and programming and speaking engagements, was a connection to a very special mentor, guru, and guiding star. We followed the white rabbit and fell into the rabbit hole, going after the stories of the first woman film director, Alice Guy Blaget, and what makes Alice, well, Alice. Today we are celebrating her 150th birthday, July 1st. Happy birthday, Alice Guy Blaget.
Oh, yes.
To share, I have this lovely bottle of champagne. Now, if I could do this right, I don't know. Yikes.
Yeah, if you just go slow, it does come off. I prefer to go slow and you get the pop, but not the spray.
Right. I don't want the spray. Oh, isn't that a lovely sound?
Yay. Happy birthday, Alice.
Happy birthday, Alice. I can't believe it's 150 years since Alice Guy Blaget was born in France, in Paris. So here we are. I am with Kimberly Skirm, producer, casting director, Kimberly Skirm Casting Society of America, and now director. And yeah. How appropriate.
Yes, the new addition to my multi-hyphenate is taking on the same banner as Alice, telling stories from the director's chair.
Wasn't she a way of us feeling that we're on the right path? She was always my mentor. Ever since I fell into the rabbit's hole, when I found Fort Lee Film Commission, it was some kind of film festival in Lafayette Theater. And I wrote to them and I said, hey, I'm doing this film festival reviews thing. And they introduced me to Alice Guy Blaget. And I fell into the rabbit hole.
And then I fell in right after you, once you told me about her.
I know. That time, it was so much of a spotlight on her. I think it was 2010 through 2011, a special director's award, DGA. You were very much involved in that.
Yes, and we had the pleasure of being at the DGA theater in New York City, celebrating and being a part of her honorary induction, which was amazing. And how important to be there. That was very special.
It took a while to get that together. We had many meetings. We connected with a lot of people from the Film Preservation Fund and New York Women in Film and Television and WIFTI, Women in Film and Television International, everybody was on board at that time. Up to the point in 2012 when we got the headstone for her.
Which, and what an important milestone that was. The fact that she didn't have a headstone and that money was raised and that we were able to be at the cemetery and at this unveiling with Solex Studios also on the headstone was just very important. And something so many women do not know about, that this prolific front runner, and she was also just ahead, really ahead of her time, showcasing marginalized people and just telling really interesting stories. And then having a studio. I mean, women couldn't even have credit cards in the 70s without their husband's signature, but Alice was running a studio.
Not only that, but how did she raise $100,000 to even build a studio? And she had so many people that were, as you say, marginalized. She had women bringing their children. She had childcare on the studio set. She hired a lot of women. She hired people of color. She was the first one that did that. They had African-American cast and not in blackface. She did so much technically that was so inspiring to me, because I just really feel like I'm a tech chick. You know, we started doing podcasting a long time ago already, since 2006, before people even knew what a podcast was. And now there's so many different ways of utilizing it. And I just have her to thank.
Well, yes. And back in our deep dive, if you remember from all that research we were doing and the research you were doing on writing the former title of the film or the original script, Madam Director, that the ads that we found from the newspaper of female editors, like the want ads, help ads were in the newspaper. And there was little sketches of women editing movies because that was a job that women were doing.
I know. She was totally open for any kind of improvement and teamwork. It wasn't the top-down vertical. This was getting everybody in together, because I was doing even more research. Thanks so much to Marquise LaPage. Is it LaPage? LaPage? I'm not sure.
And it's Allison LaPage with that great French accent.
and Allison McMahon. For the research that they've done, they're the same pioneers of creating these documentaries about Alice. I don't think you see too much of it again. No, it's time to bring it up again.
Yes, it is. In honor of her birthday, definitely getting back, perhaps on the calendar of the Chesapeake Film Festival hosted in Easton, Maryland, that is one of our interim screenings throughout the year. We did do a Women's History Month screening of, which I'm trying to remember which film we did, and we had Mixed Pets. So we screened Mixed Pets, and one of our board members at the time was also quite musically inclined and was able to just integrate a soundtrack to the screening. So we were able to screen it and have a Q&A afterwards. And it was just wonderful to have an opportunity to host, you know, that event and be able to share all the knowledge that I have of Alice and her career. And of course, starting out with Gaumont and the Lumiere Brothers and just all the work that she did. And I love those stories of her, oh, sure, you can play with the equipment after you finish your work. And that she became so prolific because it was just her tinkering around with things after she finished it, all of her secretarial work.
And then she became one of the guys, one of the guys in the technical department, with the lighting, with the camera work. She was teaching how to use the camera and asking them to do the special effects. She was doing the colorization, wanting to really bring it out in sound synchronized filmmaking in 1905. Come on. She was ahead of her time. But like any new technology, there's always going to be somebody who wants to take advantage of it, and they make the money on it and kind of take it away from what the aesthetic was in the very beginning or what it possibly could have been. That's what I'm seeing happening right now with the new technology. All of a sudden, you're just doing things that you've been doing, and then somebody's saying, wait a minute, I can do better and I can make money on it. And away they go. But I always still go back to the question of what would Alice do?
Uh-huh.
Oh, and I would come up against a brick wall. And she was someone that needs to be showcased again.
Celebrated.
Yes. Yes. Celebrated. And this could be the start of the year going up, because I do love March being Women's History Month. July 1st for me was, I don't know why I remembered that. And then I remembered you were so much a part of that at the time.
Yes, we were so busy and so involved for a number of years until let it go by the wayside. It is time to get back on track and live.
We did the panels in Fort Lee. We did the panels, Real Jersey Girls, and 100 years of celebration of the work that was involved. We did Asbury Park, Garden State Film Festival.
Inspired us to do our Women in the Director's Chair panels at Sundance and interview the likes of, fortunately, Francesca Gregorini and Stacey Passan and Lynn Shelton, who since passed on. I mean, that Alice's work inspired us to make sure that we were showcasing other female directors, as well as Jennifer Jarnigan, a female DP, and the collaborations and the storytelling that women are doing. So being reminded that Alice has been around for so long, and that we all need to be aspirational towards her accomplishments. But remember that, again, she built a studio and that she raised the money to do that. So that she was really a trailblazer. And just being reminded of that, I think, is important. And next July, that, you know, at the tail end of her 150th year, that we definitely need to be doing some screenings of her films to remind people of this prolific storyteller.
In 1910 census, she was listed as housewife.
Wow, that's a great piece of research. And that her studio and her work is
in 1912. So somewhere between 1910 and 1912, she took that major step somehow and did it. See, that's part of my story, is how she did it. How I did it. Wasn't that in the Young Frankenstein recipe? Here's how I did this. Between that and the other films that I believe are being found and preserved, the Women's Film Preservation Fund has been doing such incredible work promoting not only her work, but other women of that era that were doing the films. So I am stepping back in.
Yes, it's definitely time for that again, for sure. And just looking back too, at this interesting time that we're in right now, we have studios negotiating with unions and so on and so forth. And we just spotlight back to her that at the time, the formation of the Solex Company, it was the largest pre-Hollywood studio in America. Local people don't know, of course, that Hollywood did not exist at this time. And Fort Lee really was the precursor to Hollywood, that was the wild, wild west from Manhattan being out in Fort Lee, New Jersey. And again, that her studio was the biggest at the time.
Before there was Hollywood, there was Fort Lee, the start of the industry, the American filmmaking industry in Fort Lee, New Jersey. But I know that there was a lot of film going on in the Maryland area at that time. I will be doing more research on that, but it is the perfect place to have more of a highlighted area to do the films. Tell me about your experiences as a director now, stepping into that position.
Well, it's long time coming, having studied theater at American University, and really quickly realizing that I wasn't only interested in acting. I loved the craft of acting, but my directing classes were my favorite. And I loved all of the design elements. So I was very interested in all of the crafts and all of the elements of storytelling. And then accidentally got my job in casting 33 years ago in September, and would work on huge movies that would come through Washington, D.C., and was seeing huge male director Alan Pakula and Sidney Pollack and Wolfgang Petersen, big director after big director, Jim Cameron. And not that I was feeling at the time that I was missing out, but certainly I think in the back of my mind, I was saying that, oh, what 25-year-old girl can be a director when all of these men were, again, prolific directors. But I loved my job of casting because I was really always directing talent in the audition room. So I was still getting to enjoy that piece of storytelling, you know, one actor at a time, and then was painting the screen one face at a time. And then after turning to producing and helping to help other directors be storytellers, I eventually thought, well, why don't I just assemble all these great people for me to direct something? And then had to make the shift that while that was a great idea, that I have to feel comfortable asking other people to line up and do things for me too. So that was a big change. I was so comfortable asking other people to come onto a film for somebody else to direct, but to now be asking for me to be at the helm of the creative. So that took a bit of a shift too. But once that happened, it was a great opportunity to really dig deep into storytelling. And I'm just a lover of story and really focusing on that. So my philosophy is that I don't only want people to watch films that I direct, but I want them to feel films that I direct. So love to dig into the psychological and emotional state of the characters and what journey they're on. So we can really dig into that and create a playground for actors to just dig deep and tell stories.
You think by going to film festivals or going to Sundance Film Festivals, as many as we have done
already. Oh, yes. Over a dozen times we've been there.
Has that influenced you in creating that feel for the movie? Sitting in the audience and watching how the people react to films, talking to people afterwards about films at the events that they would have.
Yes, the experience of a film festival, to have an opportunity to watch the film, feel the film, and then be able to meet the creators and talk to them afterwards. I love nothing more than going to festivals for that reason. You don't normally, in a studio situation film or even an independent film that gets a wide release, have the opportunity to meet the creators. So when people say, oh, should I go to a film festival that I don't have a film in? Absolutely, you should go. So the friendships that I've garnered and the films that you get to see, you can't have that experience anywhere else. Seeing it in a big screen with a whole bunch of people and then getting to meet the creators afterwards is just unbelievably moving experience. Firsthand accounts of anecdotal stories that happened on set, or just being able to dig deep and say, what inspired you to even tell this story? And to get those heartfelt places, especially when things are based on people's real life and they were really exploring something that happened in their life, and this is allowing them to have a healing process. And then the story allows others to realize I'm not alone in life. What an important job that storytellers have, to allow others to know that they're not alone. And if these characters were able to make it through the journey, I can make it through this journey also.
When you're talking about telling the story that someone has expressed, that perhaps that they had felt themselves, would you talk about documentary or also the narrative where it might be touching on something that they have experienced, or would the actual experience, let's say, you know, the docuseries that we are seeing so many come out that have more of a narrative quality to it, and yet they are documentary, they are true stories?
Yes. Wow. Have documentaries evolved over time? I mean, I always enjoyed them because I just love learning. So I feel that documentaries are really teaching us things. And so I've always enjoyed watching them, but they've come so far and that they're so cinematic now and very interesting. And very particularly one that we will be screening at the Chesapeake Film Festival and doing as a special screening in August with Peter Bradley is about an artist and his journey, and the director, his primary job in the film business is being a DP. It's stunningly cinematic. And the only thing we see is the artist himself and his work and photographs of his journey through life and being a creator. So I think documentaries are amazingly cinematic, but these real life stories that translate, very specifically two of the films that I am directing, Metronome and Journey to Now, both are based on real people's stories. And so we're on the journey with them and experience the trials and tribulations of their life and how they got to the end of the journey that's in the story is really wonderful. And having met the real people, I think what a great experience too, that as you cast these films, that then the actors get to meet the real people because all are still living and they can interview the real people as well as myself doing that to really bring all of that to the story.
How has the technology changed to create those stories that you're talking about being cinematic? The access to the technology and the director of photography working that way?
Well, the barrier of entry now, of course, when you and I got started and people were shooting on film, once your film ran out, you were done shooting. So it was very different. And that you had to really raise so much money to be able to acquire a Panavision camera and acquire the film stock. And you were usually, as an independent filmmaker, getting short ends because you couldn't afford to get the, you know, 1,000-foot magazines that the studios were getting, but they always had leftover and could have things recanned, and then independent filmmakers could buy them. So you were always shooting on short ends. So that was organizing, and a lot of planning had to go into. We only have so many feet of film, which equals so many minutes of screen time. So we have to be so organized, because literally in the middle of a scene, if you haven't planned properly, click, 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 and your film is out, and that you know, wouldn't capture that whole scene. So I think the barrier of entry now that, you know, even my mom has the technology on her iPhone that she could make a movie if she wanted, but that does not mean my mom should be making a movie. So I think the barrier of entry just with technology has allowed anyone to do it. And, you know, young people, you know, as young as 10-year-olds are shooting videos all the time because they can. So everybody's becoming a little more cinematically inclined, but again, it doesn't necessarily make them the master, like the cinematographer who, you know, started working on a Panavision camera and really understands storytelling and understands what should be within that frame, shot by shot by shot.
So you're saying right now is the best time. Making a film, being a director, especially if you have that kind of background, as many years as you had in all aspects of filmmaking?
I think it is. I've seen quite a lot of technology change over time. And it does afford, particularly, I think, women, the opportunity that you can shoot an entire feature. I'm casting one right now for some local DC filmmakers, women and film members, and they were able to get a grant for $100,000, which is not, you know, to make a full feature, a lot of money, but they're able to, because of technology, obviously people doing them lots of favors, to shoot an entire feature film. You probably could not have done what they're doing 30 years ago, just because of the cost. It would have been at least three times the amount, I bet.
And it seems like film festivals have evolved in that same way. There was a time when it took a lot of money. You had to have a big audience coming out to see the films, to break even. I know there's some film festivals that are in trouble now since the pandemic, especially.
To the same point about all of this film stock and the things that you had to do, you needed to have a projector, and you needed every filmmaker needed to have a print made of their movie so that it could be screened in a movie theater. So you also needed a projectionist, which is a skilled job and also a union job. And now you can send a link to your film that's living in the cloud and it can be played from a link. Now, sometimes if you have bad Wi-Fi, that's not always the best way to be doing it, because chances are that the projector was always going to be okay because it was checked in advance and your Wi-Fi could get bad. So it could be problematic, but yet that, again, it changes the barrier of entry of people who can submit to film festivals and have their film screened in many different places all over the world, and certainly has afforded the luxury of virtual film festivals, which again did not exist when we started going to Sundance oh so many years ago. There wouldn't even have been an opportunity to do that.
Absolutely. I remember starting out as the managing editor for Film Festival Reporter, and I was just writing a schedule for the film festivals that are going on, and how it exploded with Without a Box. Now that's gone, and there's something else,
Film Freeway.
Film Freeway, exactly. I'm on that too. I see things all the time. Now, moving into this area, because this is where we started in the DC area together. We met at American University. It was...
We love American.
Randall Blair's class. You came in there. You had your funky glasses and your outfit on there, and you're the casting director. And that was a learning experience from the get-go there. Since then, I had moved back to the New Jersey, New York area, and you kept showing up there. You kept coming out there. And now I'm back in the Maryland area. I'm really happy to be here. And I will follow your lead as to, have you heard about the new DC Docs, Sky Sydney's new one?
Right. That was the spinoff, like in a TV series, you'll have a spinoff. That was a spinoff of Silver Docs Film Festival. So AFI does still have their festival, but she really was focusing and keeping everything very DC centric. So,
yes.
Again, women doing great things.
All the time. For 150 years. Hey. Alice Guy Blouchet, I am so proud of knowing that this person existed, how she started, what she's done, and it was almost lost until people found her again, and more are doing the retrospectives, more they're finding her films, preserving her films, and I think we're going to have to take a ride to Mary Rest Cemetery one of these days.
We do. We need to take a road trip and go and put some more flowers on her new headstone. Just to reiterate, it was that she directed over 1,000 films, and approximately 150 of them, you know, may have survived, but they're still trying to find films.
I know. I'm sure that there are going to be a lot of other people that will pick up the pieces and follow her trail, because once it's lost, it's lost. It's gone. She did some really amazing things. I found a whole box of research that I did on her, so I'm getting back into that. This was so great. Just talking about, hey, we did this. And then this came on, and then we did another thing, because she was just so inspiring. And I hope that she inspires a new generation of filmmakers.
Yes. Well, we will make sure that she inspires a new generation of filmmakers by bringing her feature film, your feature film about her, to light, so people can learn more about Alice Guy Blouchet.
I hope so. Do you want to read it?
Yes. Yes. I need to read that new draft.
Mm-hmm. Kimberly, thank you for
my pleasure for
being my friend.
Yeah.
And reconnecting.
And we can reconnect around Alice Guy Blouchet, and let's get our stories out there.
That we will do. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, I'm going to have another glass of champagne here.
Perfect.
Thank you, Alice.
Perfect. I know. Yes. Thank you, Alice.
Happy birthday, Alice Guy Blouchet. Yes. 150 years and many more.
I know. Can't wait. So yes, look forward to seeing you in person next week. And we're going to make a plan. We're going to get this Alice movie made.
I'm going to send you the script.
Yes, please do. Okay. I will get on it. Yes. I can't wait. I can't wait to read it.
It was a serendipitous moment. I almost shut down this podcast because of circumstances in life beyond my control. But the full moon is out. It's time to move heavy furniture. And the show must go on. Film Festival Reviews is back.
Become a subscriber. Go to filmfestivalreviews.com. This show was recorded at Weechief Studio Productions. Audio engineer Yuri Turchin. Produced by March Hare Media.